Think about the device you're, well, using to listen to this deep dive right now. Just for a second, hold it in your hand or picture it in your pocket.
Yeah, the literal lifeline.
Right, exactly. So if you were to, say, accidentally drop that device into a river today, or if it just refused to turn on tomorrow morning, what actually disappears with it?
Oh, a massive amount of stuff.
I mean, sure, you lose your apps, your contacts, maybe some work emails. But if you're like most people navigating the modern world, you're also losing something like vastly more important. You're losing 10,000 unstructured, unbacked up, totally unlabeled fragments of your own life.
It's terrifying when you actually stop and think about it.
It is. You're one bad software update or, you know, one forgotten password away from a total generational blackout. We've somehow convinced ourselves that snapping a photo of a moment is the exact same thing as preserving it. And it absolutely is not.
No, it's a profound illusion of safety. I mean, we are currently documenting our lives at a volume that would be frankly unimaginable to any previous generation in human history.
Oh, absolutely.
We take more photographs in a single afternoon at the park than our great-grandparents might have taken in their entire lifetimes.
Yeah.
Easily. Yet, paradoxically, we are leaving behind significantly less actual, usable history. We're hoarding digital files, but we are just starving for context.
Which brings us to the core mission of today's deep dive. And welcome in, by the way. I want you, the listener, to just settle in, grab a tea or a coffee, because we are unpacking a highly detailed product guide. It's currently in private beta for a platform called VB.
VB.
Right. Right. And our goal today is to figure out if there's actually a viable way for ordinary, everyday families to preserve their history, their stories, and their context without it all just getting swallowed up by the absolute noise of the modern internet.
Which is a huge task.
Huge. And I want to set the ground rules for us right now. We are keeping this conversation entirely down to earth.
No tech bros speak today.
Exactly. No Silicon Valley buzzwords, no impenetrable corporate jargon. Imagine we're just having a proper, relaxed chat down at the local pub about a genuinely practical idea. Because look, at the end of the day, the problem VB is trying to solve is a working class everyday problem.
Yeah, everybody's phone is a disorganized mess, no matter who you are.
Right. We want to know if VB is truly the digital equivalent of a secure, fireproof family memory box.
Well, a fireproof box that is also remarkably intelligent.
Okay, log that.
Because when you dig into the architecture outlined in this documentation, what strikes you immediately is that VB isn't just trying to build like a better photo storage drive.
Right.
They are trying to fundamentally re-engineer the psychological relationship we have with our own memories. And they start by explicitly tearing down the framework that we all currently use to share our lives.
You mean social media?
Exactly that. The very first guiding principle the documentation presents is a phrase that sets the tone for everything else they've built. They call it a museum, not a feed.
A museum, not a feed. Man, let's unpack the psychology of that, because just the word feed implies something we have to constantly gorge on, right? It implies consumption.
Yes, mindless consumption.
Right. And when you think about how social media architectures are built today, they're essentially slot machines.
Yeah.
You pull the lever, you refresh the screen, and you wait to see if the algorithm rewards you with a dopamine hit.
And the cost of that dopamine hit is your personal history.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, think about what happens when you post a cherished family memory, maybe a photo of your newborn child, or a tribute to an uncle who just passed away, on a traditional social platform.
It just goes into the void.
It gets immediately thrown into this chaotic, high-speed blender. It's sandwiched between a targeted advertisement for running shoes, a viral video of a stranger doing a dance, and whatever the trending outrage of the day happens to be.
Look, it really feels a bit like standing up and shouting your deepest family secrets in the middle of a crowded, noisy pub.
That's a great way to put it.
Right. Because everyone is listening, half the people are judging you, someone is trying to sell you a drink while you're talking, and by tomorrow, everyone has completely forgotten what you said anyway. It's just exhausting.
It is a phenomenal way to visualize it. It's a public square designed for friction and transaction, not for preservation.
Right.
So VB explicitly rejects every single mechanism of that public square. The documentation lists out what the platform categorically does not include, and it reads like a direct indictment of modern tech. There is no public feed. There is no profile discovery.
Wait, pause on that. Does that mean if I search your name on a browser, I just can't find your VB profile?
Yeah, absolutely cannot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, profiles and memories are entirely unsearchable to the public. Furthermore, there are no follower counts. There are no like buttons.
There are likes at all.
None. There are no engagement streaks designed to, you know, psychologically manipulate you into logging in every day. And perhaps most importantly, for a system handling family history, they are not monetizing or selling your behavioral data to third parties.
So if the traditional social media platform is the loud, chaotic pub, VB is essentially building a private, locked sitting room, like a space where only the people you actually invite can gather.
Or, to use their own terminology, a museum.
Right, the museum.
Consider the behavioral shift that happens when you walk through the doors of a physical museum.
You quiet down.
Exactly. You instinctively lower your voice. You slow your walking pace. You don't look at a beautifully preserved artifact behind glass and think, I wonder how many likes this got.
Right, that would be absurd.
You look at it to understand where you came from. A museum values calm remembrance over the desperate, constant pressure to secure engagement.
I really, really appreciate that approach, because the psychological toll of the feed is something we rarely acknowledge when it comes to family archiving.
We don't talk about it enough.
We don't. We're subconsciously trained to perform our memories rather than just record them. If a photo of my kid doesn't get enough comments from my extended family, a tiny part of my brain feels like, well, like the memory itself was somehow less valuable. Is it a toxic way to document a life?
It turns authentic living into a performance metric.
Yes.
VB's documentation explicitly states a preference for calm remembrance. They emphasize that any interactions within the platform should be entirely optional and respectful, and that they will never use guilt-based design patterns. They just want to eliminate the anxiety of curation.
Okay, I am entirely on board with the philosophy. A private, quiet, secure digital museum. But let's bring this back down to reality for a minute.
Sure.
The biggest hurdle with any kind of family archiving isn't the philosophy, right? It's the friction. If this is a private museum, how does an ordinary bloke, a busy, exhausted parent, or an older relative who isn't particularly tech savvy actually build the exhibits?
And that right there is the crucial point of failure for almost every other journaling or archiving tool on the market today.
Right. Because if I sit my family down on a Sunday afternoon and announce, all right, everyone, it's time to log into the portal and write your memoirs, they're going to laugh me out of the room.
Oh, absolutely.
A blank digital page is incredibly intimidating. Nobody wants to feel like they are writing a historical textbook after working a 9-hour shift.
The designers behind VB clearly identified that a secure vault is completely useless if it remains empty due to user fatigue.
Makes sense.
So to solve this, they engineered a system designed to gently draw the stories out of people without it ever feeling like an obligation. They refer to this system as memory nectar.
Memory nectar. It has a slightly, I don't know, poetic ring to it.
Mm.
But how does it actually function mechanically for the end user?
At its core, Memory Nectar is a system of automated low-pressure prompts. Instead of offering you a blank screen and saying write, the platform asks you a highly specific question.
Okay, like what?
Well, it might be a weekly thought, an end-of-month reflection, or just a gentle nudge to a specific family member if their archive has been quiet for a long time.
That makes total psychological sense. If you ask me to summarize my 20s, my brain just freezes.
It's too broad.
Exactly. But if you ask me, what was the absolute worst, most unreliable car you ever owned, and where did it break down? I could give you a 20-minute, highly detailed story without even thinking about it.
Specificity breeds recall.
Right.
But the true ingenuity of the Memory Nectar system isn't just the questions themselves, it's the friction-free methods they've built for answering them. If you're someone who hates typing on a small glass smartphone screen, you can simply tap a button and record a voice note directly into the app.
And the system doesn't just save the audio file, does it? I read that it actually processes it.
Yes, it does. The platform can transcribe your spoken words and use that text to propose a structured, written draft of the memory.
Oh, wow.
It extracts the narrative you just spoke aloud and formats it for you to review, essentially doing all the heavy lifting of the writing process.
That is a massive time saver. But I have a very practical pushback here.
Let's hear it.
My granddad, for example, he struggles to navigate his smart TV menu. Even downloading an app, setting up a profile, remembering a password, and navigating to a voice recording button, that is going to be a bridge too far for him.
That's a very fair point.
So is this platform actually accessible for people who are fundamentally uncomfortable with modern apps?
This brings us to a feature that I believe is the most elegant piece of engineering in the entire platform. VB has an email reply system that entirely bypasses the need for the user to ever open the app.
I genuinely loved this when I was reading through the beta docs. Walk us through exactly how a user experiences this email feature.
Let's use your granddad as the perfect example. If he has email prompts enabled on his account, the VB system will send a memory nectar question directly to his standard everyday email inbox.
The one he already checks.
Exactly. He might wake up, open his email like he always does, and see a message from VB asking, "What is a distinct smell that instantly reminds you of your childhood home?"
So he's just looking at a regular email? No special software required at all?
None at all. To answer, all he has to do is hit the standard reply button in his email client. He types out a few paragraphs about, say, his mother baking bread or the smell of a coal fire.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And if he happens to have an old scanned photo on his computer, he can attach it to the email just like he would if he were emailing you. Then he hits send. That is the entirety of his workflow.
Just hitting reply. And then the VB backend catches it and does all the sorting.
Precisely. The system receives his email from his registered address. It automatically strips away all that messy, quoted email history that usually piles up at the bottom of a thread.
Oh, the signature blocks and all that.
Right. It cleans all that up. It takes his written text, applies it as the story, uses the prompt question as the title, and saves any attached photos as media. It instantly packages all of that into a beautifully formatted memory and securely deposits it straight into his private vault.
That fundamentally removes the technological barrier to entry. I mean, you are reducing family history preservation to the simple act of replying to an email.
It's as low friction as it gets.
But, and there's always a but with this stuff, whenever we start talking about systems that auto-format, transcribe, or organize data in the background, we have to talk about AI.
Naturally.
Because in the current tech climate, if an AI is involved, people rightly start worrying that the computer is going to start hallucinating facts or taking creative liberties with their history.
That is a highly relevant concern. We're seeing generative AI models invent historical events and fabricate context on a daily basis out in the wild.
Exactly.
But VB approaches this with a rigid, non-negotiable design principle. They call it keep the human as the author. The documentation makes it abundantly clear that any AI functionality within Memory Nectar acts strictly as a drafting aid, never as an autonomous creator.
So it's not going to try to autocomplete my story and accidentally claim my family invented the toaster.
Absolutely not. The architecture relies entirely on explicit human verification. The system might transcribe an audio note, or it might scan a batch of uploaded photos to extract the metadata, you know, grouping them by the GPS location or the date they were taken. But it is hard-coded to never guess identities.
That's a relief.
It will never invent a relationship, and it will never fabricate an event.
So the human being retains ultimate veto power over everything.
More than veto power, they retain initiation power. A memory is never considered finished, and it is never permanently saved to the archive until the human author has reviewed the draft and explicitly clicked the save button. The author is always, always in control of the final narrative.
Which is incredibly reassuring. And speaking of keeping control of the narrative, there is another very practical safety net mentioned in the docs for the actual writing process. Because, let's be honest, nothing kills the desire to journal faster than losing your work.
You're referring to the local draft protection.
Yes. How does that mechanism protect the user? Because I've been burned by this so many times.
Imagine you're sitting at your computer 30 minutes deep into writing a highly emotional, detailed recollection of a family holiday. Suddenly your home Wi-Fi drops out, or your browser crashes, or you just accidentally close the tab.
Oh, I would be furious.
On many web platforms, that work just vanishes into the ether, and the frustration is so high that you probably won't try to rewrite it.
I would absolutely walk away and never ever do it again.
VB prevents this by automatically and continuously saving your text and your media selections locally, directly within your browser's local storage.
Oh, nice.
It doesn't even need an active connection to their servers to do this. So when you eventually reopen the browser and navigate back to VB, the system checks your local storage, finds the unfinished work, and prompts you to restore your unsaved draft.
It just takes all the anxiety out of the process.
So there we go.
We've established that getting the memories into the system is remarkably friction-free, whether you're dictating, emailing, or typing. But where do these digital artifacts actually live once they are inside the platform? Because this is where I think VB solves one of the most toxic dynamics of modern digital life, which is the question of who actually owns a shared memory.
To understand how they solve it, we really have to look at their specific database architecture. It's fundamentally different from, say, a shared Google Drive folder or a Facebook group.
I see.
VB organizes data through three distinct segregated concepts. They have my memory album, shared memory albums, and contact lists.
Well, let's pull those apart, starting with my memory album, because the documentation describes this as the absolute core of the experience.
My memory album is your sovereign territory. Every single adult member who joins the platform is automatically issued one. It is a permanent, entirely private, personal archive.
When you say entirely private, you mean not even my spouse or my kids can see what is in it by default.
By default, it is visible to absolutely no one but you. It acts as the permanent source database for every single memory you ever create on the platform.
Wow, okay.
So when your granddad replies to that email prompt, the resulting memory doesn't just float in some communal family pool. It goes directly into his private My Memory album, locked away until he decides otherwise.
Okay, so I have my locked vault. But the whole point of a family archive is that we occasionally want to look at things together. How do I show my sister the photos from our parents' anniversary party without giving her the keys to my entire private vault?
That is the exact purpose of the second architectural pillar, the shared memory album.
Ahoy.
These are bespoke, private group spaces that you can create for specific purposes. You might create a shared memory album called the 2026 Anniversary Party, or one called Maternal Family History, or simply the sibling group.
And I can just invite specific people to each of those individual albums.
Yes. And how you manage those people brings us to the third concept, which is contact lists.
Which are basically just address books, right?
They are address books, but they serve a vital privacy function. You can create multiple completely separate contact lists. You might have one for your immediate family, one for your old university friends, and one for your colleagues.
Right.
The architecture ensures these lists remain completely segregated.
Ah, I see where you're going with this. It prevents the collision of social spheres.
Precisely. Your university friends have absolutely no way of discovering that your colleagues or family members are also on the VB platform, and vice versa. There is no overarching friend network that suggests you connect with someone just because you both happen to know the same person. It is a strict compartmentalization of your social life.
That level of privacy is honestly refreshing. But let's dive into the actual mechanics of sharing, because this is where the documentation introduces what they call the golden rule of VB, and it genuinely blew my mind.
The golden rule dictates that an author never, under any circumstances, loses ownership of their original memories.
Contrast that with how we share things today.
Mm-hmm.
Look, if my family has a shared iCloud album or a WhatsApp group, and I upload a precious photo of my late grandmother into it, what actually happens to that file?
When you upload to a traditional shared cloud or a messaging group, you are essentially forfeiting control. You're handing a copy of that file over to a communal space.
Right, it's just out there now.
Any other member with access to that space might be able to download it, alter it, forward it to someone else, or most destructively, delete it. If your uncle accidentally highlights your photo and hits delete, it vanishes from the shared space for everyone.
You completely lose the provenance and the safety of the original context. So how does VB handle it differently when I share that same photo of my grandmother to a shared memory album?
When you choose to share a memory in VB, the original file and its associated story never actually leave your private My Memory album.
Wait, really? The file doesn't move.
It does not move.
Then what are the other people in the shared album actually looking at?
They are looking at an authorized view. By sharing, you are merely granting the shared album permission to project a view-only mirror of your original memory. The original remains safely bolted down inside your private vault.
That is a massive paradigm shift. So if I have a falling out with a family member, or if I just decide that a particular story is, you know, too personal to be in the group album anymore, I don't have to ask an admin to take it down.
Not at all. You simply enter your private album, locate the memory, and revoke the authorization for that specific shared group. The projection instantly vanishes from the group album, but your original memory remains entirely untouched and safe in your personal possession.
It's the difference between loaning someone a physical book and giving them the only existing manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Now, what about the roles within these shared spaces? Are there admins?
They keep the roles intentionally simple. There's viewer, editor, and owner.
Okay, straightforward.
A viewer is strictly read-only. An editor can view the contents and also publish their own original memories into the shared space. An owner has all the abilities of an editor, plus the administrative power to invite or remove members and manage the album settings.
But wait, if an owner controls the album, what stops an owner from editing or deleting a memory that I published into that space?
The golden rule stops them. The documentation is incredibly strict on this point. An editor or an owner never gains the permission to rewrite, alter, or remove another person's original memory.
Okay, let me give you a highly realistic family scenario to test this because I want to see how it breaks.
Go for it.
Let's say my brother creates a shared memory album for a disastrous camping trip our family took in 2012. He is the owner of the album. I write a memory detailing how it rained the entire time and he burnt the only tent we had. I publish my memory to his album. He reads it, gets defensive, and decides that my version of events makes him look bad. You're telling me that as the owner of the album, he cannot just click my post and hit delete?
He absolutely cannot. He does not own your memory. It is sourced from your private vault. He cannot edit your words, and he cannot delete your entry from the album.
Okay, but this is family we're talking about.
Yeah.
People disagree on how things happened all the time.
Yeah.
If he can't delete my version, how does the platform handle the fact that he completely disagrees with my recollection of the burnt tent?
This specific dynamic is why VB developed one of their most philosophically profound features. They operate on a concept they call honest uncertainty, which directly facilitates the creation of separate perspectives.
Explain how separate perspectives work, because this feels like they have somehow digitized the concept of a family argument.
In a way, they really have. Traditional databases and social media platforms are fundamentally authoritarian when it comes to truth. They demand a single definitive narrative.
Right.
One photo, one caption, one truth.
Right. Whoever uploads the photo gets to write the history.
But human memory is deeply subjective. Every person experiences a shared event through the lens of their own bias, their own age, and their own emotional state at the time. VB recognizes that forcing a single sanitized narrative destroys the actual messy truth of family history. So in your camping trip scenario, if your brother hates your story, he doesn't edit it. Instead, he clicks a button on your memory labeled Add Your Memory.
And what did that do?
It prompts him to write his own entirely separate recollection of the exact same event. He writes that it barely rained, that the tent was faulty to begin with, and he uploads a photo of everyone smiling by the lake.
Of course he does.
He saves it. VB stores this new memory safely in his private My Memory album, but it links the projection of his memory directly alongside yours in the shared album.
So when the rest of the family opens the album, they don't just see one version of history. They see the event, and then they see my story and his story sitting side by side.
Exactly. It presents the separately attributed perspectives right next to each other. It preserves the provenance of both accounts.
That is so much healthier than trying to enforce a single narrative. It actually protects the reality of the family dynamic. When my future grandchildren look at that archive in 50 years, they won't just see a boring, flat record of a camping trip. They will read my version, they will read my brother's defensive version, and they will immediately understand our dynamic.
Right, they'll see the real people behind the stories.
They will see the banter, the friction, and the humor of our relationship. It's beautiful.
It adds an incredible multidimensional richness to the historical record. It's a true digital museum, but one where a single artifact can have multiple conflicting plaques written by different people, all clearly signed and dated.
It is brilliant. So we've solved the friction of getting stories into the system, and we've solved the territorial disputes over who owns the memories. But I want to pivot slightly and look at the anatomy of the memories themselves. Because having a story is great, but a story without context is basically useless to anyone who wasn't there.
Context is the difference between data and meaning. The VB documentation outlines the specific components that make up a single memory, and looking at those requirements tells you a lot about the platform's long-term goals.
Right, let's break down the anatomy of a memory. What are the actual building blocks?
The absolute core requirement is a story. You cannot create an empty memory in VB. You cannot just dump a batch of 50 unlabeled photographs into the system and walk away. The architecture forces you to provide some level of textual context.
I love that they enforce that because it prevents the platform from becoming just another dumping ground for camera roll overflow.
Exactly. Now, alongside the required story, you can add an optional title, you can tag a specific place or location, you can attach various forms of media photographs, video files, audio recordings, or even PDF documents.
Okay, pretty standard so far.
And the system automatically permanently affixes the original author's identity and the timestamp of creation to the file.
But the component that genuinely caught my attention was how they handle the date of the event. Because for me, and I assume for a lot of people, trying to date old physical photographs is a massive source of anxiety.
No, it paralyzes people.
It really does. If I find a picture of myself as a kid on a bicycle, I look at it and think, was I 7 or 8? Was this the summer of 94 or 95?
Hmm.
And because I don't know the exact day, month, and year, I feel like a bad archivist. I get paralyzed, and I just throw the photo back in the shoebox.
That paralysis is incredibly common. The demand for absolute chronological perfection actually prevents people from archiving their history. VB solves this elegantly by expanding on their philosophy of honest uncertainty with a feature called date precision.
How does date precision actually function in the interface?
Well, when you assign a date to a memory, you are not forced to select a specific day on a calendar grid. If you know the exact day, great, you can input it. But if you only know that it happened in a specific month of a specific year, you can choose month precision.
Oh.
If you only know the year, you select year precision. And remarkably, they even offer an unknown precision option, which allows you to tag a memory with a vague temporal marker like sometime in the 1990s.
You have no idea what a relief that is for normal, everyday families who do not possess meticulous, librarian-level records. It removes the guilt from the archiving process. You don't have to have a perfect memory to use the platform.
Because the platform understands that the narrative context is vastly more valuable than the chronological data point. If you force users to guess an exact date, they will either lie or abandon the process entirely. By allowing honest uncertainty, you encourage them to focus on the story.
And let's dive deeper into why that story, that context, is so utterly critical. Why does leaving behind an ordinary observation or a voice note matter so much more than just preserving a high-resolution image?
To understand that, you have to look at the archive from the perspective of someone 50 years in the future. An unlabeled photograph of a brick house is completely useless to your future descendants.
It's just a picture of real estate.
Precisely. They won't know why that specific arrangement of bricks was kept in the family archive. But imagine they pull up that exact same photograph, and attached to it is an audio file of your grandfather.
Oh.
They press play, and they hear his actual voice, the cadence, the accent, the breath saying, "This is the house we lived in when your father was born. This is the porch where we used to hide the spare key under the loose floorboard. And right there by the bottom step is where the old dog used to sleep in the sun."
Suddenly, that image isn't real estate anymore. It's a sacred space. It is a cornerstone of their identity. It is the digital equivalent of finding a random Polaroid in an attic shoebox, turning it over, and discovering your great-grandmother's actual handwriting explaining who was in the picture and why they were laughing.
VB is essentially digitizing the act of writing on the back of a photograph, but they are expanding the back of the photograph to include audio, video, and endless text. And they take the concept of contextual layers a step further with an incredibly intimate feature called private thoughts.
Yes. I was hoping we would get to this. The documentation outlines private thoughts as a distinct feature separate from the main story. What exactly is a private thought?
A private thought is an independent, dated, textual note that you can securely attach to any existing memory in your archive. The critical distinction is the visibility architecture. A private thought is strictly isolated to the user who wrote it. Only you can see it.
Wait, so if I attach a private thought to a memory in a shared memory album, the other members of the group can't read it.
No one else can read it. It is not shared with the group, is not visible to the owner of the album, and it is not even visible to the original author of the memory. It is entirely ring-fenced for your eyes only.
Give me a practical, real-world example of how a family member would actually utilize that kind of isolated feature.
Let's say your aunt publishes a lovely, extensive memory about a massive family Christmas gathering from 15 years ago. She includes photos of the dinner, a funny story about the turkey, and shares it to the main family album. You open the album and read it. The public context is joyous.
Right. Everyone's having a good time.
But internally, that specific Christmas triggers a highly personal, complex reaction for you. Perhaps you were silently struggling with a personal crisis that year, or perhaps you remember a very quiet, profound conversation you had in the hallway with a relative who has since passed away.
Things that I definitely want to remember, but I absolutely do not want to broadcast to the entire extended family in the shared album.
Exactly. So you click on your aunt's memory and you add a private thought. You write down the details of that hallway conversation or your internal emotional state at the time. It functions as a diary entry permanently tethered to the communal event.
That is so clever.
Whenever you revisit that Christmas memory in the future, you will see your aunt's public story, and right beneath it, you will see your private hidden reflection.
That is incredibly powerful. It allows the platform to operate as a communal historical record and a deeply private introspective journal at the exact same time, without the two functions ever compromising each other.
It ensures that your internal life, your private reactions to your own history, are protected and preserved, giving you a richer understanding of your own timeline without forcing you to be vulnerable with a larger group.
Now, all of this context, these layers of perspective, these private thoughts, it's all incredibly valuable. But I am inherently skeptical of software companies holding things that are this valuable.
As you should be.
If I build this massive, complex archive in VB over 20 years, what happens if I want to hold it in my hands? Does VB allow you to easily extract this data, or do they trap it behind their walls to ensure you keep paying your subscription?
Portability is actually another of their core generational design principles. The documentation explicitly states, and I'm quoting here, "Keep copies portable. Families should be able to preserve an understandable copy without becoming permanently dependent on one service."
That is a very bold statement for a SaaS company to make. They are actively designing an exit strategy for their users. How does it work practically?
Within the interface, any adult member has access to an exports module. You can enter this module, select specific authorized memory albums, define a custom date range, and choose your formatting preferences. Like whether you want just the textual stories or the text combined with the media files.
Okay.
Once you define the parameters, you initiate a process called Build Private Timeline.
And what is the output of that process?
The system dynamically generates a fully consolidated, beautifully formatted chronological view of all selected memories, pairing the stories with their respective photographs and context. You can then print this timeline directly to a physical printer or save it locally to your computer as a high-quality PDF document.
So if I wanted to, I could curate a specific album of my parents' early life, export it as a PDF, take it down to a local print shop, and have it physically bound into a hardcover book for them as a Christmas present.
You absolutely could. The platform encourages it. However, the documentation does include a necessary and sobering security caveat regarding this feature.
Oh, what's the catch?
When you initiate the printing or PDF generation process, the platform explicitly warns you that the resulting physical or digital copy is now entirely outside of VB's security architecture.
Right, because once it is a piece of paper sitting on my coffee table, VB's encryption can't stop a nosy guest from flipping through it.
Exactly. The member assumes full responsibility for the safe storage and distribution of any exported copies. But providing that freedom is fundamentally essential. If you are building a system designed to outlast current technology trends, you have to allow users to translate their data into formats that don't require your specific proprietary software to be read.
It is the ultimate insurance policy for your family history. So we're going to all this effort to capture, contextualize, and protect these memories. And who is the ultimate beneficiary of all this work?
The next generation.
Right, it's our kids. Which brings me to an aspect of modern digital life that frankly gives me massive anxiety, which is how children are treated online.
It is arguably one of the most pressing ethical dilemmas of the digital age.
We live in an era of what sociologists are calling sharenting. Mm-hmm. Parents are broadcasting their children's entire lives onto public feeds. I am talking about ultrasound photos, potty training disasters, embarrassing toddler tantrums, awkward teenage phases. All of it is pushed onto platforms for public consumption before the child can even speak, let alone consent to having a permanent, searchable digital footprint.
And the permanence of those traditional feeds is terrifying. Once a photo is uploaded to a public or semi-public social network, it is completely out of your control.
It really is.
It is indexed by search engines, it's analyzed by facial recognition algorithms, it's sold to data brokers, and it becomes a permanent part of that child's public identity. VB recognizes how violating this is, and they offer a radical structural alternative for handling the younger generation.
They outline a specific account tier for children under the age of 16. They call them baby bees.
Yes.
How exactly does a baby bee account function within the ecosystem?
First and foremost, a baby bee account is strictly a viewer role. A restricted child account does not have the permissions to create new memories, edit existing ones, or add private thoughts. They cannot manage albums, and they cannot utilize the export functions. Their experience of the platform is purely read-only.
Okay, so they can't accidentally delete the family archive or post a story themselves, but who decides what they're actually allowed to look at?
Their access is meticulously controlled by an adult who holds an explicitly defined active guardian relationship within the system's architecture. The guardian handpicks exactly which linked shared memory albums the child is authorized to view.
So, as a parent, I could authorize my 10-year-old to view the album containing their own birthday parties, the family holidays, and pictures of the pets, but I can intentionally restrict them from viewing an album containing complex family history, sensitive financial documents, or discussions about adult topics.
Exactly. It provides a highly curated, age-appropriate, safe environment for the child to engage with their history. And to address the sharenting concern, there is a fundamental rule. Baby bees have absolutely no public profiles.
Thank goodness.
They are entirely invisible to the outside world, and even within the platform, they can only interact with spaces explicitly defined by their guardian.
That is a massive relief.
Mm-hmm.
It is an actual digital sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a specific feature within the baby bee architecture that, honestly, I found quite emotional to read about. It is the concept of the private until age 16 keepsakes. Walk me through the mechanics of this.
This is arguably one of the most poignant concepts built into the platform. You remember earlier when we discussed that every single adult member is automatically issued a private My Memory album?
Yes, the permanent locked personal vault.
A baby bee account is also issued a personal My Memory album upon creation. However, while the child is under the age of 16, that personal album is entirely locked.
Wait, locked to the child?
Yes, the child cannot open it, they cannot see what is inside it, and they don't even know its contents exist. But the adult who acts as their explicit guardian views that child's vault as a special ad-only target, distinctly labeled private until age 16.
Let me make sure I'm grasping this. The parent can insert memories into the child's private vault, but the child cannot access them yet.
That is exactly how it works. The adult guardian can write a deeply personal memory, record an audio message, or save a specific photograph, and choose to deposit it directly into the child's locked archive. It functions exactly like a digital time capsule.
Oh, that is absolutely brilliant. So as a father, if I am having a moment of profound realization about parenting, or if I just want to record a voice note on my daughter's fifth birthday telling her how proud I am of the person she's becoming, I can record that audio, drop it into her vault, and know that she won't hear it until she is older.
You are systematically building a trust fund of memories. And the architecture protects the space fiercely. Even the guardian who deposits the memory cannot casually browse through that private archive later. They can only deposit new items into it. The system is designed to build a secure, curated space that fundamentally respects the child's future autonomy and privacy.
I love the idea, but let me offer some pushback on the age restriction.
Okay, sure.
Why hard code it to 16? Why not allow the parents to unlock it when the kid is 12 or 13, when they usually get their first smartphone, and start asking for social media accounts?
If we consider the broader picture of digital maturity, handing a young adolescent the ability to permanently alter, delete, or broadcast their digital identity is a massive psychological burden. We see the anxiety it causes teenagers today.
That's true.
VB intentionally delays this responsibility. They want to shield children from the pressures of digital curation. The anxiety of writing the perfect caption, the pressure to document everything, until they have achieved a level of cognitive maturity necessary to understand what permanent archival stewardship actually entails.
It is protecting them from the feed mindset until they are mature enough to appreciate the museum.
Yeah.
So what actually happens mechanically on their 16th birthday?
The platform initiates a beautiful transition protocol known as graduation. On or after the child's 16th birthday, the system promotes the restricted baby bee account into a standard adult experience, which the platform delightfully refers to as an egg account.
From a baby bee to an egg.
Yes. In that moment of transition, the young person becomes the sole sovereign owner of their personal My Memory album. The vault that has been locked for 16 years finally opens.
Oh, wow.
They gain immediate full access to a lifetime of keepsakes, voice notes, photos, and private thoughts that their parents, grandparents, and guardians have been quietly and lovingly accumulating for them since they were born.
Think about the emotional weight of that moment. Imagine waking up on your 16th birthday, logging into this system, and suddenly having access to pristine audio recordings from your grandfather, who passed away when you were 7, speaking directly to the 16-year-old version of you.
It is a profoundly moving experience by design. The documentation refers to this process as an age-based sovereignty model. It is the moment the technology steps back and says to the young adult, "This is your history now. You own it. You are responsible for it." It is literally handing over the keys to the family vault.
Handing over the memories at age 16 is a wonderful type of succession. It is a coming-of-age ritual digitized. But it naturally leads us to a much heavier question. What happens when we, the adults, are no longer here to curate the museum?
That is the big question.
It is. This brings us to the final and honestly the most vital purpose of VB, which is long-term legacy planning and future stewardship.
This specific area of the documentation is where VB transitions from being a very clever memory app into something entirely different, a cultural preservation project. They have an extensive section dedicated to their future product direction, aptly titled Building Memories for Generations.
And it is important to clarify for the listener that these specific legacy concepts are outlined as future goals, right? They aren't fully active in the beta app today.
That is correct. Building systems that govern data after death requires incredibly complex legal, privacy, and security frameworks before they can be safely deployed. But the philosophical vision they outline is what matters. They are asking a question that tech companies almost never ask. How does a family safely understand, steward, and pass on meaning over multiple decades or even centuries?
Because right now, the tech industry's answer to death is appalling. If I use a standard digital platform or a cloud drive and I die tomorrow, what happens to the thousands of family photos I have stored there?
In almost all cases, it is a complete disaster. If you haven't explicitly shared passwords, which violates terms of service anyway, your family is locked out. Eventually, the credit card on file expires, the payments stop,
right.
The platform flags the account as inactive, and after a certain period, some server farm in Silicon Valley automatically executes a script that permanently deletes your entire family history just to save a few fractions of a cent on storage space.
Your whole legacy is wiped out because you missed a direct debit payment from beyond the grave.
Mm-hmm.
It is horrifying. How does VB plan to prevent that?
VB is essentially attempting to construct a legally and structurally sound digital will for your family's history. This begins with the concept of named successors. Rather than relying on shared passwords, a member will be able to formally nominate trusted individuals who are designated to take over the stewardship of the archive in the future.
So I could go into the settings and say, if I pass away, my spouse gains full control of my vault, and if my spouse is also gone, my eldest child takes over as the steward.
Yes. And it is crucial to understand that nominating a successor does not grant them immediate access while you are alive. You are nominating them for specific administrative responsibilities that only activate under future conditions. VB plans to verify these successors and record their consent, incorporating a cooling-off period to ensure it is a deliberate, secure, and legally sound action.
But how does a software platform actually know when to trigger the succession? It can't just rely on someone clicking a button and claiming I have died.
Absolutely not. They outline a rigorous death or incapacity reporting protocol. It will be a highly verified evidentiary process. The claimant will likely need to provide legal documentation, such as a verified death certificate or a legal power of attorney for incapacity. Furthermore, the system will issue automated notifications to other linked family members and enforce a mandatory dispute window.
A dispute window? Why is that necessary?
To prevent malicious behavior or family disputes. If a disgruntled relative tries to seize control of an archive prematurely by submitting false reports, the dispute window gives the actual owner or other family members time to contest the action.
That's smart.
The governing rule is strict. Absolutely no content changes hands and no access is granted until all required checks, verifications, and waiting periods are fully complete. And every single transition of power is recorded in a permanent, unalterable custody history.
They are treating digital memory assets with the exact same legal gravity and caution as physical real estate or financial inheritances, which makes perfect sense because an annotated century of family history is arguably much more valuable to a family than a lot of physical property.
Absolutely.
Now, beyond just handing over the keys, there are some other legacy concepts they're exploring that blew my mind. Tell me about time-locked memories.
Time-locked memories are a fascinating concept that borders on science fiction, yet is entirely achievable. This is a feature where a member can author a memory today, seal it, and choose a specific future date or a verified condition for its release.
So if I have a 5-year-old daughter, I could sit down tonight, record a video message giving her advice for her wedding day,
yeah,
upload it into VB, and mathematically lock it so that absolutely nobody, not even me, can open it until a specific date 20 years in the future.
Yes. It allows you to reliably communicate with the future. Alternatively, you could use it for practical legacy management. You could lock a highly sensitive financial document or a complex piece of family history, setting the release condition so that it only becomes visible to your named successors after your death has been officially verified by the platform.
It is literally digital time travel. And once a family line has maintained an archive for generations, what is the ultimate end game? The documentation mentions something called a legacy stone.
The legacy stone represents the ultimate finalized archival state. Imagine an archive that has been actively curated and passed down through three generations. Eventually, the family decides that the historical record of that era is complete.
Okay, they're done adding to it.
Right. They want to preserve it perfectly for future descendants to view and learn from, but they want to ensure no one can ever alter, edit, or delete a single word of it again. The Legacy Stone is a fully realized, permanently read-only state. It locks the archive in amber, applying clear, permanent rules for ownership and access.
It transforms a living, editable database into an immutable historical monument, like casting a manuscript in bronze.
Precisely. It secures the history. But this brings us to the critical existential vulnerability of any digital system, no matter how well designed it is. Servers cost money to operate, electricity is not free, data storage is not free. If the family line eventually ends, or if the current steward goes through a period of severe financial hardship and simply cannot pay the subscription fee, how do you prevent the Legacy Stone from being quietly deleted by an automated billing script?
That is the ultimate fear, isn't it? That a century of carefully curated history is erased because of a lapsed credit card. How do they solve the money problem?
VB's proposed answer to this is perhaps the most empathetic, deeply human feature concept I have ever seen from a technology company. They call it compassion access.
Compassion access. What does that actually mean in practice?
It is envisioned as a charity-funded or hardship continuity program built directly into the business model. The foundational belief is that a family's historical archive should never vanish from the earth simply because a billing cycle failed.
That's incredible.
If a family falls on hard times, or if a legacy account is orphaned because the last steward passed away without a successor, a dedicated compassion fund would step in. This fund would cover the basic hosting and server costs to ensure the family's history remains protected and accessible rather than being deleted.
Wow. That is, look, it's a brilliant philosophy, isn't it? Knowing that your family's history isn't just viewed as another monetizable data point to be squeezed for revenue and then discarded when the money dries up. They are actually viewing these archives as vital cultural artifacts that deserve protection regardless of current financial status.
It speaks to a very mature philosophy about technology. VB understands that the technology itself will constantly change. Over the next 50 years, servers will change, file formats will evolve, and devices will look completely different. But they recognize that the original stories, the open metadata, and the human context matter vastly more than whatever fashionable presentation format exists today. They are actively designing their entire company around the reality of human absence.
It is a heavy topic, isn't it? Planning for our own absence. But when you really dig into it, it is also incredibly comforting to know that there's a structure being deliberately built specifically to catch the things we leave behind, to hold them safely, and to ensure they survive us.
I believe it is the most responsible thing we can do with our digital lives. We currently spend an absurd amount of time and energy curating a highly sanitized, performative public image for total strangers on the internet. We spend so little time curating our actual, messy, beautiful truth for the people who will love us tomorrow.
That is a phenomenal realization to end on. Let's take a breath and tie all of this together, because we've gone on quite a journey today pulling apart this beta documentation.
We certainly have covered a lot of ground.
We started by looking at the absolute chaos and psychological exhaustion of the modern social media feed, the noise, the ads, the desperate performance for strangers. And we explored how VB is running in the complete opposite direction by building a quiet, private, secure digital museum.
We examine how they are systematically removing the friction of archiving with the memory nectar prompts and the genius of email replies, ensuring that anyone, regardless of technical skill or age, can easily contribute their voice to the family record.
We talked about the reality of family dynamics and sibling rivalries, and how the platform protects individual ownership, allowing conflicting perspectives to sit side by side without anyone getting the power to rewrite history.
And we looked at how they are safeguarding the future. Protecting children in a secure, read-only environment until they graduate at 16, and conceptualizing robust, legally sound legacy frameworks like time-locked memories and compassion access to ensure these archives survive long after we are gone.
It is a massive, ambitious undertaking, but a deeply necessary one. And for you, listening to this right now, perhaps on your commute or while you are making dinner, I want to bring this back to your life. It is very easy to look at your own day-to-day existence and think, my life isn't interesting enough to archive. I'm not a historical figure. But your ordinary, boring Tuesday, the chipped mug you always drink your morning tea out of, the specific route you walk the dog in the rain, the sound of your laugh when you are genuinely surprised, that mundane reality might be a treasured, priceless piece of family history to someone in 60 years who just wants to know who you were.
Context is everything. It is always the mundane details that actually breathe life and humanity into history.
Exactly. So I want to leave you with a thought to mull over today. We talked about those time-locked memories a few minutes ago. If you had the ability to set a time-locked memory today that wouldn't open for 50 years, what mundane, ordinary detail of your life right now would you put in it? I don't mean your biggest career achievement, and I don't mean your wedding day. I mean the everyday stuff, the view from your kitchen window, the way your street sounds on a Sunday morning, the specific brand of coffee you swear by. Think about it. Start saving the nectar of your life, not just the noise. Because one day, someone is going to be desperately searching for that exact memory. Ensure that it is waiting for them.
Build a museum, not a feed.
Well said. Until next time, take care of yourselves and keep those stories safe.